Could be useful stuff down there.
On it.
JB started removing tools from his shoulder bag. But just then, a clang sounded from the second doorway, the noise echoing slightly in the darkness. Quickly leading the way, Ryan found a set of double doors standing open and strode into the kitchen of the subterranean cottage. Nothing seemed amiss there, and he waited for the sound to ring out again. Ryan stood guard while the others swept the kitchen. The range and refrigerator were both electric. There was a dishwasher under the counter and a full assortment of fancy cooking machines, each totally useless without electric power. Mildred opened a cabinet to reveal some herbal tea and a small amount of exotic spices.
I'll take those. Too bad there's no real food.
Found some cleaning solutions under the sink.
JB tucked some of the items into his munitions bag and left the others. Moving on, they found a small laundry room behind a pantry, the shelves starkly empty. Past the kitchen was the main room of the cottage. It was a big place. The living room had a small eating table with some chairs. In the far corner was a big screen television and DVD player, stacks of rainbow discs piled high. Near the sand-filled windows was a large desk with a complex military radio and stacks of nautical charts showing the tides, deep currents, and shipping schedules. Two side doors led to small bedrooms, one disheveled, the other neat. Everything was coated with a thin layer of dust, but otherwise seemed in good condition. Holding their candles high, the companions stood in the flickering blackness, straining to hear anything. Then Doc shook off Christy's arm and walked over to a sideboard, where he lifted a lantern from amid the items on the table. There was still a small residue of oil in the reservoir, and soon he had the wick going, bright white light filling the subterranean cottage. Now they could see the recliners and sofa placed before the television, and a gun rack on the wall with several long blasters and several sagging cardboard boxes of ammunition. On the far wall was a large bookcase full of paperbacks that crumbled into dust as they approached, producing an amazingly large, acrid cloud. The fresh air from the open door in the lighthouse was seeping into the cottage, finishing the job of destruction started by the sheer passage of time. Then, everybody froze as a soft metallic patter sounded. It came again as a faint spot of light appeared on the bricks of the hearth, and with a loud clang, the flue moved aside, and a blue crab dropped into view.
Hot pipe! They pried it open!
Dean stomped on the mutie before it could scuttle away, grinding it underfoot until the thing was paced on the flagstone floor. Grabbing a fireplace poker, Ryan hooked the catch on the flue and forcibly pulled it closed, cutting off the pincer of a crab halfway through the vent. The limb fell onto the andirons, and a frantic scratching could be heard as something moved wildly about on the sheet iron.
Now what?
Jack lifted a wooden chair.
Yeah, build fire.
Have to open the flue or we choke to death on the smoke.
Ryan pulled the poker tighter to hold the flue closed.
Find something to jam it in place.
Breaking the chair apart, Jack forced a piece of wood into the fireplace. The chair leg splintered as it scraped across the rough brick, and the teenager had to use the butt of his Colt Python to pound it into position. There was a lot of scampering about on top of the flue, judging from the noise, but he sat back to inspect the work and nodded.
Not come to this.
Nervously, Mildred glanced at the windows.
Some species of crabs can tunnel. We better nail those bookshelves over the glass just in case.
Tools in the laundry room. Jack, Dean, give her a hand.
I'll check the blaster rack.
With the Steyr cradled in his arms, Ryan rested his aching leg on the dining table and watched the open doorway and the fireplace for any sign of movement. The situation wasn't good. They were still alive, but trapped down there, low on candles, almost out of ammo and food. Eventually, they would have to leave, and then the waiting muties would swarm once more. They might be able to swim to the next island, but that would require a diversion to get rid of the crabs, and they had no more explosives of any kind.
Hopefully, the rounds in the blaster rack were still live.
The work of closing off the windows went very slowly, the panes of glass vibrating with every fall of the hammer. Christy solved that problem by sliding the sofa cushions between the glass and the wood slats. After that, the job progressed much faster. Shifting to another position, Ryan felt the journal in his pocket. Pulling it out, he used the panga to slice off the lock and flip through the book to see if there was a diagram of the cottage or any useful info inside. The handwriting was faded, but still legible in the dancing illumination of the candles.
Oh, good enough.
Mildred placed aside the hammer. Walking around the cottage, she surveyed the work. The planks were double thick over every window, almost 4 inches. No way the crabs could get through that.
Good idea about those nails, Dean.
The boy shrugged. Driving some nails through the wood before they attached them over the windows seemed an obvious thing to do. Anything coming through the glass would impale itself on the sharp steel points. Crude, but effective.
Looks pretty solid. Can't say the same for these blasters, though.
J.B. returned a rifle to the blaster rack. All of the weapons were useless, rusted solid, and the ammo was even worse. Fortunately, he spotted some silverware in the kitchen. If it was real silver, and not just silver plate, then with some clean sheets and sunshine, he could start producing high-explosive gun cotton by the pound. Then disassemble the plumbing, and they'd soon have some pipe bombs. Fuses would be a problem, though. Maybe he could use the Merc primer in the dead ammo to bleed a crude flash fuse. Yeah, that just might work.
Hey!
Jack went to the dining table and emptied his pants pockets of oysters.
Forgot had. Got before crabs came.
Knowing the mollusks wouldn't stay fresh long once out of the water, the companions took seats and started dividing up the seafood. Having eaten only a short while ago, Christy let the others have the oysters and took some small sips from her canteen to control her hunger. Even if they found edible food down here, there was no chance of clean water. They would have to distill that from the sea, a long and slow process. Screwing the cap back on, Christy noticed Ryan was still engrossed in the little journal. She edged closer.
What is it, lover?
The man wouldn't be spending this much time reading some suicide note.
Good news, or good luck for us, whatever you want to call it.
Ryan thumbed deeper into the book until coming to some blank pages. The last few pages were written in different color ink than the rest, which made it easy to find the pertinent parts. J.B. glanced up from his oyster dinner.
What do you mean?
The dead guy we found is from pre-dark days, all right. He talks about how this lighthouse has a bomb shelter in the basement. If the seal's held, there should be ammo, food, everything we need, and lots of it.
Dean hopped from his chair.
Let's go!
Slow down, son. The door is booby-trapped. Gonna be triple tough to get through. Blast mines in the floor and ceiling. We miss one, and the whole place goes up.
Read in journal?
Yeah, he rambled on about Skydark for a while, then got to the important stuff.
He saw the war.
Mildred said the words, as if each one were alone and independent of the others. Ryan tossed over the journal.
Here, read for yourself. J.B., let's start on that door.
As the men walked off, Mildred snatched up the journal and started to turn the pages. The personal journal of somebody who actually saw the world end. Incredible. In the background, Doc snored softly in a chair, and the muty crabs clawed and scratched at the iron plate blocking their way into the underground cottage. Placing her blaster on the table for easy access, Mildred moved a candle closer for better light. She began to read aloud.
My name was Ronald Kiefer, and in this journal I will confess everything. But I cannot be judged because there is no law anymore. Not since this afternoon when the bombs began to fall and the whole world caught fire while David and I watched from the imagined safety of our island.
Placing aside his fountain pen, Ron reached up to close the window above the tiny desk. For a moment he listened to the thick silence, the ticking of the wind-up clock on the shelf, blessedly silent, now that he had smashed it with a hammer. A trickle of sweat formed in his hair and flowed down the side of his unshaved face, to dangle from his badly healing chin for a second, before plummeting onto the clean white page of the pocket journal. He stared at the tiny stain as it spread across the paper and blurred the words. His sister had given him this book to jot down his thoughts, and to remind him to write while he was stationed here in the Marshall Islands. Or as he liked to call it, the goddamn middle of nowhere, or the edge of the world. The words made the man shake, and he concentrated on breathing to stay in control. But it was so quiet here. So very quiet. He had been watering the garden when the horizon strobed with brilliant light flashes. At first he thought it was a ship at the Navy base exploding, or maybe lightning. But then he felt the powerful vibrations in the ground and realized that they were...